Hi, I'm Dylan Binion, and you're listening to the Cognition & Co. podcast, Psychology in South Africa. On today's episode, we're going to be speaking to Monique van Hattem. She is a registered independent psychometrist and a clinical psychology student at SMU. We asked Monique to come on the podcast and give a little bit of insight into her subjective experience going through the master's selection process, as well as what it's been like studying at SMU since. This podcast marks the first in a series where we'll speak to master's students and graduates about their experiences with applications and interviews. Due to the national lockdown, Monique and I couldn't meet up in person to record this, but we have managed to get together over Zoom to put together this podcast. All right, well, Monique, welcome to the podcast. As you know, this is the very first one that we're doing with the Cognition & Co. podcast. And the whole thing here is really focusing on psychology in South Africa. It just makes sense to then speak to somebody at the forefront of what's going on in psychology in South Africa, a psychology student busy doing her master's. So thanks very much for being here.
It's a pleasure, and it's a wonderful opportunity to be a part of your first podcast.
Yay. Cool. Well, I thought that we could start this whole thing off by getting to know you a little bit better. You know, basically you telling us where your journey in psychology started.
Okay. Basically, my journey in psychology started back in 2012. Okay. I was actually studying a BIS multimedia design degree at the time, but I was working for a psychologist part-time. So that was my student job. And while I was working there, I started familiarizing myself with psychology. I ended up reading some of the books that was in her office. I also saw the patients come in, I would give them tea, and I became very, very interested in psychology. And I eventually told this psychologist, I'm very interested in what you do. And then she started taking me on courses with her, actually. So from then I started just going on courses with her, and I became extremely interested in psychology. And then at the end of that year in 2012, I decided I wanted to change and I wanted to become a psychologist.
Excellent.
I did not know what I was getting into at that point. But yes, it's all worked out.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So then obviously you went and you started studying psychology.
Yes. So I started in 2013 at the University of Pretoria. And yes, the first year I was, you know, I did a general BA. So I did, I majored in English and psychology. And I only really started volunteering in my third year.
Okay.
Which is very, very important. And you sort of discover this along the journey. Oh, we've got to have volunteering experience to get into master's. But I did continuously work for that psychologist right throughout. I've been working for her. And I, the volunteering experience that I gained in third year, I went all out, actually. I volunteered at the CSANG once a week. That was doing counseling for people with HIV and AIDS. Then I also volunteered at Hospivision. That was my favorite experience of all time, of everything I've done. And that was the experience in which I discovered that I really wanted to be a clinical psychologist. Hospivision is a nonprofit organization at Steve Biko Academic Hospital. And I was also trained in trauma counseling there. And that's when I got a feel for the hospital environment and for what psychology, a clinical psychologist really does. And overseas, they call it a health psychologist, but I loved the hospital environment.
Excellent. That's a very cool experience to have been able to get at like an undergrad level, basically, yeah?
Yes, yes. And also in my third year, I was an EC member. I was in the psyche division at the University of Pretoria. So that is, it's an organization at UP that helps the students gain experience. And I helped run the mini outreach division. So we organized charity events for the students to get involved. And that was also great exposure into various communities in South Africa. And Because I was volunteering at the hospital as well, we did a project there as well. So that also gave exposure to the students. So that also was a bit of a leadership position that I took. And then also I gained a lot of experience and grew a lot in that myself.
Sure, I'm sure. So then obviously you finished up at UP with your undergrad degree, and then you would have gone on to honours. Where did you do your honours?
I did my honours at UNISA, and it was awesome doing my honours there. I really loved it because I got the opportunity to work at Star Academy and to work quite a couple of hours with the psychologist. So I gained a lot of experience that year as well, having the opportunity to study correspondence part-time and work. It was quite hectic, though, I must say, because I did my honours in 1 year. You have the opportunity to do it in 2 years, and I did it in 1 year. And sometimes I wondered if it was necessary for me to do it all in 1 year, but I did do that.
That's hectic. For those of you guys that are listening, the UNISA Honors is 8 modules that are year modules, and they are quite hectic. And doing all of them in 1 year is a brave undertaking. I broke mine into 2 years while I was living overseas, but I don't think I would have survived if I'd done all 8 in 1 year. It would have been just too much.
It was hectic, and it's not really necessary. If you do it over 2 years, there's no problem with doing that, actually, because that way you can really focus and try and get your marks as high as possible. So even though I did it in 1 year, doing it, there's nothing wrong, and it's actually good for you to do it in 2 years. There's no rush.
Sure, but good for you. Good for you in getting through all of that. That must have been an insane year, especially if you were working at the same time. I think it's difficult. It's very difficult.
Yes. No, definitely was a challenge.
I think like the universities and the applications should have a look at that and be like, wow, these people did it in 1 year and they worked. Like, this shows dedication and character, you know?
Yeah, definitely hard work.
All right. So then obviously in 1 year you finished off your BA honours at UNISA. And then what did you do?
After that, so during honours was the first time I applied for masters, and obviously my next plan was to do my masters in psychology.
Sure.
Now the thing with UNISA is I don't have progress marks like all of the other universities, so it's a little bit difficult to apply. In fact, the feedback I got, I think it was from WITS, as far as I remember, was apply the year after when you've got all your marks. Anyway, I was stubborn and attempted anyway, because I was like, I'm still going to try. I sent them all the marks that I did have for assignments and things which really didn't count, but I gave it a try and I wrote them a letter saying, you know, I don't have any marks yet or progress marks because I'm studying through UNISA. And then I said to them, I'll let them know when I do get my progress marks or my final marks. But that didn't work. So they just they told me to apply the next year once I've got my marks. So yeah, that was fine. So that year I got rejected and at the paper rounds already, and that was already difficult for me because I was planning on moving to the next stage, and then that didn't happen. So what I did in the meantime is then I found out about the psychometry course at UJ. I started brainstorming some other opportunities. I was like, okay, maybe that's an option. I applied for it. I also applied for PGCE at the University of Pretoria. And I got in for both. I was accepted for both. And then I decided to choose psychometry because at that time my thinking was, this is more in line with psychology. But I think if I went the PGCE route, that's also fine. But yes, and also I thought about it. I thought I'd rather be a psychometrist than a teacher.
100%. And I think, you know, obviously that psychometry degree gets you a registration with the HPCSA. So already, yes, I believe that is putting you one step, you know, ahead of the field, and gives you an outlet to actually practice within a psychological field here in South Africa. So that's excellent.
Yes, yes. No, it was awesome. It was really, really wonderful, especially the training.
Sure, I bet. And I bet you there's a lot that you would have done during that training that would have helped you grow and develop over time and push you towards a better master's application and a stronger master's class.
Like, you can't believe. Like, psychometry is obviously about psychometric assessments, and they do a lot of development. So I did my internship at JVR Psychometrics, and there I did a lot of assessments. And even when they develop new assessments, they need people to practice it. Even when I got there, I had to do a whole lot of assessments. And then they gave me the results and they developed me, which was an awesome, awesome opportunity. So I got to see what my personality was like and where my developmental areas are. I also learned a lot about myself. I learned there that I was actually very entrepreneurial, for example. It was just the qualities about myself, my good points, my bad points, my weaknesses, and how I could develop them. I got great insight just from doing that program.
I think that there's a lot of psych students out there that really believe that they know themselves really, really well, you know, that they're, you know, super in touch with their, you know, their self-awareness and their ability to self-reflect. But I also believe that if you are going to be applying for masters and perhaps other like postgrad courses, doing a psychometric assessment on yourself is probably a very good thing and very introspective.
Yes, no, it definitely is. It is. It's so helpful to do a psychometric assessment, and yeah, I would recommend it. And yes, a lot of people do feel that they know themselves or know they've developed well. And I mean, I also felt like that. I felt like that in my undergrad already. And actually, I didn't know myself. And at SMU, we say that you can't develop alone. You have to develop through others. And you only get insight into yourself through others. You can't really see into yourself, you know what I'm saying, unless you see it through others. So it's very important, if you want to develop yourself, to check in with others. You know, how am I doing? How do you think I'm looking at this situation? You know, you get what I'm saying.
I think that's a very like SMU-esque like metaphor there as well, for like the African psychology and like the Ubuntu yeah, you know, sort of perspective that's carried through that university. So I like it. I like it.
Yeah. So that is obviously my way of thinking, and I really believe in personally that we can't develop alone. We need to develop through others.
Excellent. All right. So obviously then you finished up your psychometry. And obviously while you were doing that, you were applying still for masters, right?
Yes. Yes. So I applied. That was the second year I applied. Okay. So I applied to UP, WITS and UJ in the second attempt. I wanted to apply to a lot more, but I was very busy with my internship. And so I was struggling to find the time to do the applications. And also there's always this bit of fear. There's always this bit of fear when doing the applications. So anyway, I applied at those three institutions. And I unfortunately got rejected again.
Oof. It's difficult. It's difficult. And especially trying to bounce back from that is difficult.
Yes, no, it was difficult. And every time I got it rejected, you have to go back to the drawing board and reflect and, okay, what can I do now? And then I was very ambitious then. I was like, okay, fine. If I'm not going to get into masters, I'm going to do something big. That was sort of my attitude. And I was like, I'm going to start my own business. And that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to register as an independent psychometrist. I did that. And then I was like, straight away, I'm going to start a psychometric practice. And I called it Butterfly Effect Assessments. And yeah, for the next 2 years after that, I actually ran that practice and did lots of other things in between.
Excellent. And do you feel like having a like an independent practice like that helped you change your mindset as you went forward with your applications for masters?
It definitely did. Absolutely. And I think even the skills I gained in opening my own practice there would be beneficial now for me if I wanted to. You know, obviously you make mistakes, you learn things, and I went through all of that already. It helps me get into introspective into the corporate world, for example, and how things are run there, and how cutthroat it actually is. And it strengthened me. It really did. As a sensitive individual going into a corporate world and seeing what it was like, I became a lot more stronger. And I was able to start handling rejection a lot better, not only from masters, because I had my own business, obviously did presentations at many companies, showing my services, and I got no, very often. And that forced me, and this actually started giving me that introspection into going back and looking when I did a presentation for a company, why did that not work? Maybe I should try this. And I do that with every aspect of my life, including masters.
Excellent. Excellent. So obviously that's two attempts. I know from behind the scenes here that you had four attempts. Tell me, how did it feel going into the third one?
Okay. The third attempt, I was then very hesitant to apply, And I actually missed some deadlines that year because I was like, should I apply? Should I not apply? I remember missing VITS. And luckily, I had and still have a very, very great support system. And I'm really, really strongly believe in having that support system around you. And I was encouraged to just apply and just to as many as I can or what's open. So I did apply to UJ, UP, UNISA, yeah, those three institutions that year. And I then felt motivated and I finished the applications and I handed them in. And that was actually the first year in my third attempt that I got one invite. And that was to UJ.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, the reason why I asked specifically about the third one is that I'm busy with my applications for my third one now. And it has been difficult. It's been difficult to motivate myself. And I've actually caught myself at times just before I started applying, just kind of ruling it out and saying, I'm giving myself a break from this. It's been a tough couple of years applying for masters. And I was kind of just concerned that would I be able to handle the rejection that comes with this if it happened again, you know? So the third one hopefully is the charm for me, but yeah, at least you got an interview that year. And I think that's excellent. How did things go at UJ?
I think because it was my first interview at UJ, it started off with a group, conversation or discussion, and I was very, very nervous, overly nervous actually, but at the same time I didn't really get a chance to talk at that round, and I felt like I didn't get a chance to show myself because yeah, there were people in the group that obviously want to like talk over each other. So yeah, that's what happened. And then after that, yeah, I got rejected again. And I must say, after that third rejection, because I was very hesitant in applying, I was a bit angry at my family, actually. Like, I told you that this would happen. And now look what happened. I got rejected again. And I hit the lowest of lows after the third rejection. Yes, I remember, like, not wanting to get out of bed and... And even though I had actually the psychometry as my backup, and I just felt like this is really what I want to do, and it's just not happening for me.
Mm. There's so many times where they tell you like, don't take this personally, but it's such a personal journey that you go through during the interviews, you know, especially if you get into an individual interview round, you know, they press difficult areas of your life and you walk out of that and you're like, whoa, that hit me deep, you know, like, and all of a sudden you're told, okay, well, you didn't get accepted, but it's not personal. And it just feels personal.
It does. It does. And I won't lie that I question myself every single year. I question myself. I was like, why didn't I get in? You know, what am I doing wrong? Even when you're doing the applications, like, what did I write? Did I do something? You just question yourself, and it's really not nice. And you doubt yourself, and it breaks you. It really does.
Yeah, I've felt that. I mean, the reason why we're talking now and the whole thing behind Cognition & Co. is the fact that I hit the lowest point of my life after my first round of interviews as well. So it just shows that it's maybe something that needs to be addressed in research a little bit more, the whole process of, you know, the mental health behind the master's interviews. And it's something I hope that I'll be able to write on at some point. But definitely something that needs to be considered, I think, by the academics around the country.
Yes. No, it's very difficult for the universities to select candidates. It really is. And I'm understanding from their perspective, but something needs to be done to help those that are rejected, because it hits lives very hard.
Completely.
Something needs to be done.
Sure. So that takes us into your fourth and final attempt, which has a happy ending to it.
Yes. Okay. So last year was a phenomenal year for me in terms of growth and development. So I got myself, after the third rejection, I did go see a therapist. Because then I was literally at my lowest low. I didn't know what to do with my life. I wasn't sure that I wanted to be a psychometrist. I knew I wanted to be a clinical psychologist, and now I'm sort of stuck in a psychometry position. That was my mindset at the time. So I did go and see a therapist who was phenomenal and really, really helpful. It was extremely expensive for me. My medical aid didn't pay for it. So I had to pull out R1,000 every time I went to go see her. And there were months that I couldn't afford it, but it was helpful. It was really helpful. And I would recommend seeing a therapist. It gives you some insight into yourself, and also helps you deal with any issues that you're obviously dealing with. And sometimes there are issues you don't know that you're dealing with that the therapist finds. So that's fantastic. But I understand the implications of not being able to afford a therapist. That is the majority of the applicants, actually. And even now when I'm doing my master's, they tell us to go see a therapist, but I'm like, hey, I'm doing like a full-time course. When am I supposed to make the money to go see a therapist? So even if you go see a registered counselor, or if you a psychometrist, or do a psychometric test, or do these online, any online development course, the point is to develop yourself. That is the point. And also to be open, to be willing to see a therapist, should you have the finances to do so.
100% agree. When I was applying last year, 2019, I reached out to a psychologist in the area where I was working at the time. And I just said, listen, I can't really afford like regular rates here. Is there anything that you can do for, you know, a potential psych master's student, you know? And she said, listen, we'll talk about that in therapy. And she definitely helped me out, but financially, obviously, still like they've got to make money. So it gained my commitment from her, and it made sure that I was going to do the work. So I still paid a fair price for therapy, but it helped me so much. It was like a double-edged sword, actually. Like, not only was I learning from her in that environment, but I was also working on so much stuff, and I had a pretty terrible end to 2019. And had I not been in therapy, I think I would have suffered worse than the year that I didn't get accepted for masters. Because again, I wasn't accepted last year, and I had issues in my personal life as well that came to a head towards the end of the year. So, like, if there's anything that I could recommend to students out there, it's see a therapist if you can afford it. And there's also options if you can't afford it, you know. A place like SADAG has trained counselors that are available for individuals. And that's a toll free number. So you can phone and chat to somebody. Some of them are even psychology graduates. They have registration, so they can look after you if need be.
Yes. No, I completely agree with it. It really is important. And I would recommend that if you possibly can. And my therapist as well, in the beginning, I paid her the full price. And then eventually I was like, I really don't know if I can continue with this. And Shame, she was really fantastic. And she really believed in me and believed that I could make it. And thus she did help me and reduce her fees as well.
Oh, that's amazing.
So just reach out and give it a try. Reach out and give it a try. There are people out there that really want to help.
I think a lot of psych students as well, one of the initiatives that I run is a mentorship program. And I think a good way for students to get out there and maybe make contact and not only network within the field, but also give themselves the ability to learn from somebody else is to find a mentor. And I struggle to find a ton of people that are registered psychologists that are willing to be a part of the program. But at the same time, they are. So if you're sitting listening to this at the moment and you're kind of stuck and you're not sure and you can't afford therapy, reach out to the people in your area, the psychologists in your area, and ask them if they're willing to perhaps be your mentor. You know, it might take 5, 10, 50 emails, but at the end of it, you could end up with a psychological professional that's willing to help you on a mentor-mentee basis. So stemming from that, obviously, we spoke a little bit about the rejection aspect of it. We'll get into the fact that you were selected for a program in a little bit, but I think let's just touch on the idea of what you went through in terms of the rejection. Obviously, there's no need to be super vulnerable here and tell us every gory detail of it. But how did you cope with it? You know, what did you do? How did your support structure help you? You know, those sort of things.
So each time I was rejected, I won't lie, I cried and I grieved, and I sat and did nothing for a few hours to a few days, where I was just like, I, what is going to happen with my life? I felt like everything had come to an end. This is my plan. This is my goal. This is my dream. It's not working out. So I cried and I grieved. And I think that's completely normal. But eventually, and every time, and I still remember, I went for a walk one afternoon with my mom, and I said, I know I keep getting rejected and I fall apart, and I was still apologizing to her. I'm sorry for falling apart like this, but you know, each time I get up and I try again and I try something else. And my mom said, yes, no, you do. And that's fine. So I think it's fine to just crash for a bit, but each time get up. It's important to get up and keep trying, and yeah, to reflect. To try and reflect as much as possible. And once again, I'm going to say reflect with somebody else, not on your own, because that can lead you in a loophole of questioning yourself where you'll never get the answers. So reflect with somebody and try and figure out, okay, what am I going to do next? This didn't work. What else can I do? And I did that every single time. And I always found something to do.
I think one of the things that a lot of students struggle with, actually, especially ones that end up getting rejected from master's programs, is what do you do while you wait to apply again? You know, and I think I know that you've done a lot. I know that you know, you've put effort into a bunch of different areas, and we spoke about this other day about how much that actually helped you grow within yourself. I think it also helps humanize the whole process a little bit, like understanding somebody else's journey, having not gotten in and basically hustling a little bit, you know, to make money, to like build yourself up. And I think it really is a bit of a hustle, because there aren't many job opportunities for psychology honors graduates. You know, without a registration, we can't counsel. So many of us have these like blinkers on where we just like, it's psychologist or bust. And I think, like, I know your background story, but I think, like, I'm sure the students would love to hear the different avenues you took that also, you know, contributed towards your growth and eventually getting into master's.
Yes. Okay. That's a good question. And it is something that I think I should chat about, because I think the key is to have an open mind to absolutely anything. And after my third rejection, I was a psychometrist. Yes, I had my private practice, but I wasn't 100% happy with just being a psychometrist. I wanted to be a clinical psychologist, and this was just not happening for me. But then I decided, you know, let me open my mind and try other things. And what happened was, I went on a social media marketing course. I learned a lot through that. And I actually built connections through that. that. And for a while, I started working, well, at that, after going on that course, I started working as a social media marketer. I first started with my own profiles and social media profiles and getting them up and going. And at that, on that course, I actually met somebody who owned a company. And he actually said to me, you know, would you like to do the social media marketing for our company? And so it just grew. I ended up doing social media marketing for a couple of companies, like something totally different, away from psychology. And through that, I met a lot of people. I made a lot of connections. And I actually, at one point, I met a guy who had contacts in Hong Kong. And I came up with this idea, okay, why don't we start a biodegradable straw company? This was before it all became huge. So even though this one didn't work out so well, which is also a growing curve, because this lady from Hong Kong flew to South Africa and her brother flew from England. And wow. The four of us had a meeting here in South Africa. So we decided, okay, we're going to start this biodegradable straw company. But she was quite a big entrepreneur. So she wanted to go big. And it's still quite a bit of learning to do. So there was also a conflict between the four of us. We actually all four opened a company. So that was also a big learning curve, you know, dealing with people and things like that. But it was really, really an awesome experience. So yes, that didn't work, but I did. It was called Jack Straw. I did that for a bit, and I started another company called MVH Media, where I did social media marketing. That one was actually working quite well. Yeah, so I was actually doing all of this at one point at the same time.
And probably all while, you know, applying for masters as well.
Yes. I was just like, I still want that, but I'm trying to figure out, you know, what other options are out there. And I ended up actually really enjoying the marketing field because I also got very involved in marketing with Coles Coffee. So this was all completely separate, but there's actually psychology in everything.
100%.
That's the one. There's psychology in marketing. There's psychology in social media marketing. It's incredible. And I started picking this up and I learned so many skills, graphic design skills and all these things. And I actually got, just before I went for the fourth round, I got a job offer from Garcia Media. And I thought, okay, perhaps that was the route for me if psychology is not going to work. But at the same time, I gave psychology my all, like I've never given it before. And that was thanks to my therapist, my family, my support system that really pushed me. I spoke to my therapist about, look, I got this job offer. I could potentially move to Canada with this job offer. Plus, I really still want to do clinical psychology. I'm scared to let clinical psychology go. What should I do? And she said, give everything your all and wait and see what happens. And then I did that. And I applied to the most institutions I could that year. So I applied to UP, UJ, UNISA, NWU, SMU, and WITS. And I got accepted to three interviews of the six. It was costly. Wow. It was extremely expensive for me to apply to all of these universities and, you know, go deliver them. And so it was costly for me, but I made the commitment to give it my all. So I was like, it might cost a lot. It might take a lot out of me. I might get rejected. It's fine. I'm putting everything out there. And my mindset changed drastically last year. Like never before. In the previous years, I felt very desperate. I felt I was deserving. I felt the system is unfair. I felt very sorry for myself. I overthought my answers when writing the applications. I overthought everything. And this time I sort of went in with a whatever happens, happens attitude. Never been in that mindset before. And I was like, you know what? I let go of that I'm deserving attitude because there's so many people that are deserving. And I was in there. I was like, you know what? I remember sitting at SMU with, there were like 200 people there that day. And I was like, probably 90% of these people are deserving.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. I'm just saying, you know, a lot of people are deserving, you know.
No, for sure.
Of getting into masters. And, you know, who am I to feel that I'm more deserving? So that mindset changed. I was just like, you know what? I know I've worked hard, but so many people in this room have also worked hard. I let go of that competition. Now, psychology is very competitive. So I let go of that competition. I decided, you know what? This is not a competition. If they want me, great. If they don't want me, that's fine. I have a backup plan. So that backup plan was a bit of a relief for me.
Sure.
And knowing that, you know, and it's difficult to get a backup plan. Look, it took me 4 years to really start finding my feet and start developing some sort of backup plan. So yeah, I was just more relaxed, and that allowed me to be my complete self. Whereas other years, I was almost like trying to impress them. What do you want from me? Let me try and give you what you want from me. And I was like, no, you know what? And even when I did my interviews, I was like, this is who I am. And if you don't like it, that's fine. That's fine. Then this is not for me. So that was the mindset. I became so much more relaxed. I let go of the competition. I let go of trying to impress them. And I was literally my complete 100% self.
I love that advice. It's exactly the mistake I made last year when I interviewed at Fitz. I walked in there knowing that they have a psychodynamic paradigm and tried to be somebody that was like heavily psychodynamic. And I walked out of my individual interviews embarrassed at the person that I portrayed, because it was no way near like who I was. So I think that's such excellent advice for students to just be yourself, you know?
Yes, and it's not easy to do, because I mean, every year I knew that I had to be myself. But I think that, I don't know, that developed in me. That it's also about finding yourself and developing 100%. Yourself and accepting yourself. I think you can only really truly be yourself once you've accepted who you are. This is who I am. And if you don't like it, well, okay.
I think something else that's so important is that, like, why I believe seeing a therapist beforehand is such a good thing, because these universities have what, maybe 15, 20 minutes one-on-one time with you, you know, and they want to learn who you are. You know, yes, they're psychologists, and yes, they're probably better at, you know, reflecting on the person sitting in front of them than the average human being, but they're not going to get to know you if you don't know yourself. So spend the time working on yourself and learn who you are, because they just don't have the time. I was there with you the year that you got in at SMU. I did the group interviews, and I feel like during that interview, I didn't shine at all. In fact, I feel like I blended into the group, and yeah, it just didn't work out that well for me. And I'm not surprised that I was out after the first day. But I remember having set up my, like, the Cognition & Co. Instagram account, and I'd followed you from, I think, like, the previous year, actually. And I remember seeing your Instagram kind of change as well, and also become like more motivating and more like just authentic and congruent with the person that you were, you know, that you are. And I remember as you were getting through the different rounds, following your posts and stuff like that, and just being like so like impressed that you had found yourself and the university had seen that in you and given you this opportunity, you know?
Yes, no, well, thank you so much for that. I definitely did find and accept myself over these years. And I'm grateful that the university did get to see that, especially in that first round. Oh, my goodness, I did not know how on earth they could see me. I'm thinking that, I don't know if they use the papers as walks. I don't know how on earth they can see, I don't know, in that first round. It's difficult for me. I mean, how many people were there that day?
I think there were like 160 people invited that day. I think it was four groups of 40.
Exactly. And they cut it like to 50 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was like, how on earth can they choose like the top 50 from group discussions? I didn't understand, but I was very lucky to have made it to the next round.
And that's the thing. You made it. You got in at SMU, at Sefako Magatho Health Sciences University. You're in. Yes. You're wearing the scrubs at the moment.
Oh, it's really awesome. It's such an awesome university. Wow, I love it. And I'm very, very proud to be a part of SMU. I really am.
That's incredible.
And also it was the first year I ever applied there. And when I walked onto that campus to hand in my application, I knew it. I don't know what it was. I had a feeling. I even phoned my mom, I remember, after this. And I told her, you know what? This is the place. I don't know what it was. I stepped on the campus. I did speak to the dean and the secretary when I went to go hand in my application. And they were so welcoming. And I think that was it. Like no other university is. When you go hand in your application at the other universities, I don't know.
It's like the boxes over there, just drop the paper in. Right?
Exactly. You can't ask them questions.
No.
Yeah, exactly. And they were so welcoming and even asked me a few questions and why are you applying? And they were just so warm. And I was just like, wow, this is such a nice institution. And that was, yeah, I was excited. And I even said, if I get in, because they were the first interviews, if I get in, I'm not going to go to any of the others. And that's exactly what I did. Because I was like, I want to go to SMU.
That's amazing. Hey, that's amazing. So obviously you've been there now studying this year, because obviously applying in 2019 means you'll be part of the class of 2020. So this year, and it's a 2-year program at SMU as well. So you're there for this year and for next year.
Yes.
Obviously we're going through a bit of a lockdown situation now. So it is different to previous years and years to come. So, but tell me about what it's been like maybe before the lockdown, like a week in the life of SMU, you know, a student.
Okay, SMU. Okay. I have touched on a bit. They have a very, a caring and supportive culture, which I really appreciate about SMU. And yeah, it's a medically based campus, it used to be called MDUNSA, the Medical University of South Africa. So that was also what attracted me to SMU, was as I mentioned before, I love the hospital environment. So I love the medical field, anything medical. So that's the kind of environment that you're stepping into. It's very medically based. One thing they value is the African psychology and developing an African psychology. So having that mindset is very important. If you want to study at SMU and wanting to contribute to debates in class and criticize the westernized way of thinking, that's very, very important if you want to study at SMU. And I don't think SMU is the only university. I'm pretty sure all of them are like that at this point, but I can only speak for SMU. They value developing an African psychology. That said, even though they are wanting to develop an African psychology, they really do incorporate and update their knowledge on psychology that's happening everywhere on an international level. And that's also something I really appreciate about SMU. So once a year, they do go to a conference in New York and they do update themselves on the new research that is happening in across the globe. And they also incorporate that into their program. So they're also very systems-based. So like the community psychology systems approach is their main focus, but they teach us everything and in detail, which I really love, because we can choose what kind of therapist we want to be once we're done. So if we want to be a psychodynamic therapist, we are more than welcome. If we want to be a CBT therapist, we can choose. They teach us everything. I personally love systems. So, and they go into great depth. We have such a phenomenal lecturer that's teaching us cybernetics, the whole systems.
Not my favorite, but that Beckford textbook.
Our lecturer explains it so well. But anyway, that's another topic.
If anyone from SMU is listening right now, I love Ecosystemic. I want to go there next year. So please don't hold that against me. I'm willing to learn. I'm a trainable individual.
Yes. No, they're also very, Ubuntu is very important. The whole togetherness, the whole we learn together. So how we are taught is through developing with each other. So they're also very open. So they want you to contribute in class. So we usually sit and discuss. We sit in like a half circle and we discuss everything. We criticize everything. We break everything apart. And they're very open to, you know, why are you teaching us this? You can ask questions. Why are you teaching us that? You know, maybe we should incorporate this. So they're very like, what do you think of the continuously wanting to know how the program is going, how we are doing, which is also really something I really, really appreciate. And they want to develop as a university as well. So they're not very structured in a, we're doing this, end of story. Okay. So there are certain like boxes that need to be ticked that we need to finish, obviously by the end of the 2 years, but they're very open to getting more information or learning more from us, which is incredible.
I think that's very important, you know, like you're catering for a demographic of student, and a lot of the times every individual has something to contribute back to that institution. So I think them being open to that is just, it's fantastic.
Yes, no, it's a wonderful institution, and the program is amazing, and they really make sure we understand things. We do work at quite a fast pace, but at the same time, they make sure we really know what's going on. Like, I even had to redo assignments because they were like, nope, it's not, which is really exhausting because we already have so much to do, and I'm like, no, I have to redo this. Yes, and also because it's over 2 years, we do have additional modules, we've all got neuropsychology, the pharmaceutical. We have that, the medications and things like that, that we work with the psychiatry students and the whole multidisciplinary team. We also get trained with that. So
that's incredible.
It's amazing. It really is.
I had no idea that there was the pharmaceutical aspect to that course as well.
That's only in second year, but yeah, they bring in the psychiatry lecturers to come and teach us that.
That's amazing. I think that's so important for the future of psychology. You know, I know that it's been a hot topic as to whether psychologists can at some point, you know, do extra courses in order to gain the ability to prescribe. You know, I know in the States at the moment it's a big, big debate. But having an MSc with that sort of understanding would definitely put you in a good position for that to happen if at some point that becomes allowed or legislative.
Yes. And it also just gives you, you know, the understanding, because when you work as a clinical psychologist, you work within a disciplinary team. Mm-hmm. And when you work with a patient, you discuss things with a psychiatrist, and it's just easy. It's just easier. It develops you more, upskills you in understanding what the psychiatrist is saying to you and what medications they're on. So that is something I really appreciate about SMU's course as well.
Exactly. And I think it's something that like I addressed in one of my applications recently, was that how much, like, you obviously think of psychology as just communication between you and the client. So like, yes, you might be dealing with a child with, say, some sort of like neural problem or something, and you have to communicate and almost drop your level of communication down to that. But at the same time, there's also like this level of like taking it up as well, where, you know, you will have to talk to a doctor or a psychiatrist at some point about this person's condition. And, you know, you need to explain it in medical terms. So the fact is that, like, yes, communication is key, but it's on a continuum here. You have to understand how to work with it on the lowest level and on the highest level. And I think an MSc program like what they're offering at SMU sounds incredible for giving you that.
Yes. And as far as I'm aware, SMU is the only university that's doing MSc.
I think so as well. I don't know of any other ones. There's a couple of M social sciences and a lot of MAs, but I don't think there are that many MSCs.
Yes, they do really incorporate the medical side.
I was actually going to ask about that. Like, had you noticed the difference, the fact that it's a Master of Science and not a Master of Arts?
Yes, no, we do notice the difference.
Excellent.
And we're going to get more into the sciencey stuff next year, the neuropsychology and pharmacology and all of that exciting stuff.
On the forefront then, hey? All right, well, Let's just go into any sort of tips and advice you might have for students going forward. What would you tell somebody that's applying this year, like myself?
Okay, well, my first tip is self-development. Like, self-development is key. It will allow you to find yourself and be yourself, because be yourself is the advice that everybody gave me when I was applying. And I was like, what? Okay, I'll be myself. But yeah, it is really important though to be yourself, but it's not easy to be yourself if you haven't developed or found yourself. Just to remember that self-development can't happen on your own. It's difficult that you develop through others. So when you're developing, and how to develop is often through reflection and to reflect with others and be open to criticism about yourself. Learn from others and what they say about you. It will help you grow. I think it's also important to understand the culture of every university that you're applying to. So that will also help you know if you fit into that culture. When I do employment selection as a psychometrist, we evaluate the culture of the company. We then do psychometric assessments to see if that candidate fits in with the culture, not only if they're skilled, but if they fit in with the culture. And that's what the universities are looking for as well. They're looking, does this person fit in with our culture and fit in with the kind of the group that we are going to select? So understand the culture of every university. Look up what they value, what their aims are, what the goal of the university is, and just try relax. Be calm. I know the competition is high. I think the universities also create that competition amongst the psychology students, but let it go. Let it go. It doesn't help because there's so many people that are deserving. And we've just got to hope that you are the one that gets in. Let go of the competition and give it your all.
Yeah, I think that competitive aspect it's definitely played on by the universities and also inter universities. If you look at this year, there's an overlap on the selection weeks between University of Pretoria and SMU, and I mean they're both in Pretoria basically. I think the reason they do that is they want you to choose which university you want to go to, because a lot of people might be invited to both and say, well, I fit better with SMU. That immediately tells University of Pretoria that student wasn't going to be right for them. So it helps them cut their numbers.
I actually completely agree with that.
So I think it's difficult.
Interview the university.
Completely. Interview them back, you know. Get your and if need be, you can reject them as well.
Yes, 100%. No, really. I think that's true because you're going to be there for a year to 2 years. And it's important that you're also comfortable within that culture.
100%. 100%. Well, at the moment, Monique is on Instagram. She's giving out tips and tricks for students that are, you know, looking for, that are busy applying for masters at the moment. And she's reflecting a little bit about what she's spoken about here today, but also, you know, just kind of giving guidelines as to her experience, but also applying that broadly over the whole spectrum of master's applications. So if you are interested in checking out Monique's Instagram, it's at Monique Psych. You can find her there and you can keep up to date with what she's up to at the moment, as well as going forward. You know, I'm sure that she will be sharing lots of stuff like what we're talking about today. Awesome. I'll also post all of her LinkedIn and Facebook profiles as well. If you'd like to keep in touch with what she's doing that side as well. She's often creating these awesome, you know, with that graphic design hustle that she was on, she's creating awesome, little documents for everybody, that might need a little bit of motivation from time to time. So please check in with that and give her a follow on those pages. But I think that's about all we wanted to cover today, really. Anything else that you had to contribute?
Well, I think we've covered everything. And if I think of anything more, I will be sharing it on my Instagram. So please do follow. I look forward to you following. And I also looking forward to giving you tips and advice. I also just want to wish every candidate out there the best of luck. I know this process is daunting. You can do it. Try not to take it personally and give it your all.
Amazing. Perfect. Well, we'll end it there. Thank you so much, Monique, for coming on the first ever Cognition & Co podcast. I'm so appreciative that you took the time out of your obviously busy schedule to chat to us, but it means the world to me, and it means even more to the students that are going to be applying. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for our very first podcast. Thank you very much for sticking around all the way to the end. And we hope that you'll join us again next time. If you enjoyed the podcast, we'd love to hear from you. Follow us on our social media pages or visit our website at www.cognitionandco.co.za.